Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kerup, guten tag, ciao, wee viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, killitary industrial poor nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Okay, back to work, back to work. The Prince of Vegan Event Organization has gone back to being a pumpkin. You are what you eat. And being pooped, just totally pooped out, entertaining, has given way to my normal life of picking up poop from all the other species around me. So they're my Cinderfella life. Comes back to normal, and rest and recuperation are over after last weekend's World Vegan Summit and Expo. Truly the most amazing event in the history of history. It was a life-changing experience for so many of us. Really a phenomenal event. Holy cow, words cannot describe what happened last weekend at the World Vegan Summit and Expo in Los Angeles, which exceeded all expectations in all ways. Afterward, Terry B., who came from Hawaii, wrote to me saying, "The best thing I've ever done in my life was to go vegan. The second best thing was to go to the World Vegan Summit and Expo." People came from all over the world. People listen to this radio show everywhere. They listen in Latvia, okay? So, and they came from Latvia, and Germany, and the Netherlands, and India, and Vietnam, and South America, and Africa, and Australia. From everywhere people came. Some were even so committed that they braved the LA freeway system and came from as far away as Santa Monica, Culver City, and the San Fernando Valley. And my thanks to all the magnificent, brilliant, thought-provoking speakers. Each one, fantastic. The food was incredible, as was the entertainment. From world-class music to hilarious comedy. What a gathering, huh? There has never been anything like it. I guarantee that. People left inspired and motivated to help others go vegan. And there was just so much love in the air and caring. And, people were simply ecstatic. It's unbelievable. As I said, you really can't. You had to be there to know about what I speak. Dr. Michael Clapper was floating. He was like dancing on the ceiling, saying how this is just what's needed. That we need to steer in this direction. We need a movement toward veganism. The way it belongs. Apparently, we accomplished our mission in expressing that and expressing that we're moving away from what has been sold to us as an animal rights movement, moving away from the dismal failures of Meatless Mondays and Proposition 2s and foie gras bans and Ringling Brothers elephant victory scams. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I really didn't expect it to be as wonderful as it was. It's really, my thanks to all the speakers, to all the attendees. You know, attendance was way beyond our expectations. Many thanks. Special thanks to Professor Gary Francione, who'll be with us just after the top of the 6 p.m. hour, Pacific time. He'll join us a little early today to recount his experiences there. So special thanks to Professor Gary Francione and to Julie Curran Meskel and to Ben Brayman and Michelle Tung, without whom none of this would have been possible. Thanks to the volunteers and volunteer coordinator Alyssa Dahlstadt and media coordinator Mark Schulman. And condolences to Ben Brayman. In the middle of all of this, dedicated to making this event happen, he had to suffer the tragic death of his younger sister, another victim of cancer. And we're reminded of the tragic premature deaths of so many of our family members, and how the way we can try to avoid them is to have our family go vegan. On this program in the past, Professor T. Colin Campbell of Cornell University, Forks Over Knives, author of The China Study, the most comprehensive study of diet and health ever, said at least 90% of fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein, and not much of it. And we were told that the dairy protein is the number one carcinogen to which Americans are most exposed. So going vegan is really a very important family value. And if you value your family and the planet, family of species, going vegan is the best way to show it. So many people did go vegan last weekend. The entire management staff at the Marriott Hotel went vegan, at least for the weekend, some of them permanently. And we appreciate attention to details that made our gathering more comfortable, more compassionate, such as feather-free pillows in our rooms. And as of last weekend, a number of vegan items became permanent additions to the Marriott menu. And our thanks to Chef Fernando, who did a masterful job in the kitchen creating a weekend of spectacular vegan cuisine, really beyond belief. I told him, now you can go open your own vegan restaurant. That's where it's at. That's where the trends are. You know, have Beyonce stopping by all the time. Has Beyonce gone fur-free yet, or leather-free, wool-free, silk-free? It's really quite amazing. And people are already clamoring for a sequel, if you can believe that. I thought these people liked me. You know, everybody's saying, oh, we need it again. You know, we want a World Vegan Summit and Expo 2.0 or a sequel or whatever, a second annual. I'm not quite there yet. I haven't even posted anything about last weekend's event. I was just really exhilarated but exhausted at the same time. I mean, I'm just getting the energy now. I guess I had to wake up to do this radio show. I had to set my alarm clock. I was interviewed on two radio shows this week. It was like, let me set the alarm. Okay, I'll come on and talk about what we did last weekend. But it was a very intense year for me. Last March with the Natural Products Expo, and then scouting about for a location and coming up with the Marina Del Rey Marriott. And from that point on, it's just been so intense in getting it all together. Everything that happens has a million details associated with it. So really, thanks to everyone helping out on that. And I guess I should get around to posting regarding last weekend's event. We'll be getting some pictures in social media, and I'll be back on Facebook and Twitter, which I which I've avoided this past week, except maybe if I saw something, someone, something I liked, I had the energy to press like, you know, or share or something. And whatever video footage that we have will soon be posting on the Go Vegan Radio YouTube channel. That will be happening in the days ahead. So many of the wonderful speakers will be on the Go Vegan Radio YouTube channel. And, wow, what an event. Coming up on today's program, one of the illustrious speakers from that event, Sofia Pineda Ochoa, who delivered her talk in Espanol, you know, as we celebrate the birthday of Cesar Chavez, a great vegan social justice activist. We'll hear how he felt about veganism and animal rights in his own words coming up on today's program. And also, Sofia was kind enough to translate a flyer for me into Espanol that I can make available to you, and I'll email to you, and you can hand that out at Cesar Chavez's birthday celebrations. You know, if Cesar Chavez were alive today and attended one of these celebrations, there would be nothing for him to eat. People don't know that he was a vegan and how important that was to him. So we'll also talk about that. And we talked a bit about how things were misdirected by, you know, people say, oh, you're divisive when you complain about certain organizations like H-Eggs, U-Eggs, and Mercy for Animals, and Farm Sanctuary, and Compassion Over Killing, and etc. But I did want to point out that you can't be divisive when you're not actually a part of what they are. So it's not divisive. I'm simply criticizing them from a distance, not in their movement. I'm not in the Enriched Cages movement. I'm not in the Animal Betrayal movement. I'm not in the Meatless Monday movement that has led to record high egg sales. Really? Time's up already? Can't believe it. Okay, so it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We will continue. Hey, you can support our work with a tax-deductible donation. You can click donate at goveganradio.com. And we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. On Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And the Bob Linden page is there. GoVeganRadio.com, grooving on a Sunday afternoon. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. You can click listen live at GoVeganRadio.com. We are syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, and you can check us out there and check out the call-in number and all those good things. I'd like to thank Nature's Flavors for its support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And this radio program, check out the website, naturesflavors.com. Whether you are a professional chef or just look like one in the kitchen, Nature's Flavors can add some amazing products to your repertoire. For example, baking. You can do gluten-free baking. There are baking mixes, such as chocolate brownies, apple cake, blueberry muffins, banana bread. Actually, thousands of products if you go to Nature's Flavors and check out, see how you can have free delivery. Naturesflavors.com. And also thanks to Vegetarian House Vegan Restaurant in San Jose for its support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can go to vegetarianhouse.us. All the people who say, well, you've you've convinced me I want to go vegan, but, you know, I don't just want to eat iceberg lettuce. Well, for example, just check out the menu at Vegetarian House. Go to vegetarianhouse.us and what do vegans eat? We have the best food. Are you kidding? And Vegetarian House caters. So if you're in the Bay Area, you're very lucky. You can have your next social event, business meeting, your wedding catered by Vegetarian House, and the food will be spectacular. Go to vegetarianhouse.us. You know, we talked a little bit about the World Vegan Summit and Expo and how activists are misguided and that we really need to focus our activism on veganism. And I see now that there's some criticism of the activists coming from environmental specialists who are concerned about, again, environmental activists who are misled. So let's take another look at our wacky herbivore species gone wild and wrong. From Vital Signs, which is published by the World Watch Institute, it says peak meat production strains land and water resources. So we've had all of these years of asking people to eat less meat, reduce consumption, eat less, have a meatless Monday. It turns out global meat production rose to an estimated 308.5 million tons in 2013, an increase of 1.4% over 2012. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization forecasts an additional growth of 1.1% in 2014 to 311.8 million tons. How much death is that? You know, how much suffering, pain, murder would add up to 312 million tons? Million times multiplied by 2,000. The individual animals get lost in those figures, but they're not lost when it comes to their suffering, to their pain, and to their killing. Why? For people to develop cancer and heart disease and destroy the environment. Are we a wacky species? Herbivores gone wild, gone mad, huh? So production is thus reaching new peaks. Meat production is reaching new peaks despite drought conditions in Australia and New Zealand, not to mention California, right? And disease outbreaks in the United States and Eastern Europe. Considering the pig diarrhea epidemic in the U.S. By the way, if you're, again, if I like to tell people, you know, you like that grass-fed beef, right? Well, if you're a fan of bacon, that popular bacon, huh? If you're eating bacon, you're eating diarrhea-fed bacon because that's the way that pigs are treated to build immunity to this this virus, this diarrhea virus. So if you, and that's it. I was just getting started on this. Time is accelerated. I am losing all track of time here. Okay, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We will continue. I didn't even get to the meat of the matter. Okay, Sofia Pineda Ochoa coming up, one of the speakers from the World Vegan Summit and Expo on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. With Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We still have the World Vegan Summit and Expo website, Facebook pages, and I guess I should start looking at them and seeing the comments and how people like the World Vegan Summit and Expo. I've just had to have a little nap between then and now. And, maybe we can find out how it went from Sofia Pineda Ochoa, who was a guest there, a medical doctor who came all the way from Texas to deliver a talk in Espanol. And how are you today, Sofia?
I'm good, Bob. Good talking to you. How are you?
Doing fine. I've recuperated from last week's event. How was it? How was it for you? How did you like the World Vegan Summit and Expo?
I very much enjoyed it, Bob. Thank you so much for organizing it. It was really well put together. It was very informative. You got a bunch of scholars to go there. You had Sherry Kolb and all of the other attorneys. You had Dr. Clapper and all of the activists. It was really a really nicely well put, very informative summit.
I thought so too. Yeah, I mean, I was amazed by the speakers there. So, and the activity for everything just was amazing. I found so.
It was very inspiring. It really was. It's really nice to see a lot of people getting together for the same cause.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So, how did you get involved or interested in? Well, I mean, your talk in Espanol covered really all issues from compassion for animals and environment and health. How did you first become interested in these issues?
Well, I first got interested, I have a medical background because I am a physician, and I got interested first in these issues. Bob, I know that you don't like some of the things that PETA does, and you don't agree, you don't see eye to eye on everything they do, and nor do I. But I started looking into these issues when I once saw on my Facebook feed somebody post a video about Meet Your Meat from PETA. And I saw it was like a 5 or 10 minute video.
Sure.
Just about the slaughter and the animals, you know, how they produce. Hold on. I'm threatening to make my story. And I have a biochemical background as well because I'm a former professor of biochemistry. And I thought, I need to go vegetarian. I think it's going to harm my health, but I just cannot participate in this slaughter. I cannot contribute to this horrible business. But it's probably going to help. It's probably going to hurt my health, but I just, maybe karma will help me in some form, you know, abstaining from doing that. So I went vegetarian, but I started doing more research on nutrition. I have my medical degree, and I did a degree in nutrition as well, and on plant-based nutrition. And the rest is history, you know. I became speaking vegan to that, and I became a lot more educated on that. And I became, you know, very passionate about this. I think I told you, well, I don't know if I told you or not. I don't remember. Sorry, we have a growling doctor. I went to a slaughterhouse to film, and you know, the things that I saw were, you know, we all see movies, we all hear things, we see the PETA videos, we see all of the footage, but when you see it in person, like all of the suffering that the animals go through, when you see it with your own eyes, I just decided I need to, like, devote my free time. I need to devote all of the resources that I can and my skills to educate people on this matter. Because this is, this is just a holocaust. This is something that, you know, it's just like hell on earth for animals. I saw mainly cows and pigs getting slaughtered. And you have no idea. I mean, have you ever been to a slaughterhouse, Bob?
No, I haven't. I mean, I've seen videos, like you said, and I saw Meet Your Meat years ago, which was very painful for me. But I don't know. I don't know if I could handle it. You know, I mean, I think I'd want to run and save every animal who's, you know, hanging by a leg, moving down the line. I mean,
it is so horrible. I mean, I was shaking after that. I was shaking. I was even crying. It was really, really difficult. And I was not there undercover. Actually, I was not invited, but they gave me permission to go there. It's a long story how that happened. But you know, just watching it from up close, you know, I went to the holding area first. And I saw the cows, and I noticed that they were so afraid, even when they were in the holding areas, when they were not, you know, right in the place where they, like, all the blood is and when all of the slaughtering takes place, even, like, they sense something is wrong. And you could see, even as they heard humans walk by, they would all trip upon themselves, like, backing off, because they were just so afraid. And once, like, in this slaughter thing, I think everybody has this concept that they have, like, a painless and quick day, that it's just, like, one day, and it's something quick and painless, and they make their last phone call, and then they go to sleep peacefully, and then you get to meet. But actually, it's more like a horror house. What I saw, and it was something that I did not know and I have not grasped it looking at the footage that I have seen before, is that most of the animals that I saw, they were not unconscious when they were being slaughtered. First of all, it was very difficult to hit them strategically, to, like, leash on them strategically for the employees because they're so nervous and afraid and fighting for their lives. But they're moving their heads, they're very nervous, and even when they did, Bob, even when they have the captive bolt in their head, speaking of the cows, that did not render them unconscious. They would be having moving difficulties, and they couldn't run or move, but once they fell to the ground, and the employees hooked up their back leg to the machine, they were still completely awake and alive and watching everything and kicking with the other three legs. And then I'm sure you've seen from the footage the way that many slaughterhouses do it. They hang them from their back leg, and then they skin them. This is while they cut their legs from the knee down. I mean, it's just, and they fall to the floor in front of the cow. Then they cut their neck, and the cow is basically struggling to breathe with the blood with her own blood rushing into her face, and then between that and the bleeding out, she finally passes away. But it's just something that I thought I need to educate people on this matter. And as I got into the health aspect of it, Bob, that's why I also decided to found, as I mentioned to you earlier, this educational nonprofit. It's called Meet Your Future, to educate people on the health impact of eating animals, the environmental impact, and obviously the impact, the ethical impact of, you know, the damage that happens to the animals themselves. Because I think that if people, you know, they're not going to go vegan because I just tell them to go vegan. But if people educate themselves on the significant health impact that eating animal protein has on their health, you know, it raises their cholesterol levels. It causes cardiovascular disease, which is our number one killer today, and which we really don't have a cure. You know, we physicians, we treat it kind of palliatively. We put stents, we do cardiac bypass surgery, but that really doesn't cure the disease in the vessel itself. So for our main killer in the United States, cardiovascular disease, which causes heart attacks and strokes, we're can you believe it, that we're treating it just palliatively? We're not treating it effectively. And a vegan diet, a vegan mostly plant-based diet, is the most efficient way to reverse that process. As you mentioned in the summit, and I know that you're familiar, and you probably saw the video that I sent you where we compiled information with the animal protein and the cancer. Animal protein also favors increasing levels of a hormone called IGF-1, which is the short for insulin-like growth factor 1, which favors cell reproduction, including the cancer cells. So it elevated levels of that hormone, which happens when we get our protein from animals, is associated with a significant increase in risk for cancer and for more malignant forms of it. If we do get cancer, it comes in a more aggressive and a more malignant form. You know, animal protein also associated with bone problems because it has more sulfur-containing amino acids, so it causes more acidosis, both, and our body leaches calcium from our bones to compensate this acidosis. So we know in cultures and in people who consume the most animal protein, they have the most hip fractures and a bunch of other kinds of fractures. So it's bad for your bones, it's bad for your heart, it's bad for cancer risk. If you eat fish, because people think that fish is a healthy food item, but it's not, and it's unregulated, it's unsafe, it's full of mercury. Mercury, you know, it's a metal that we really can't excrete very easily, and it can even cross the placenta and hurt an unborn baby before, just before it's born, a fetus, just because the mother was eating fish. So it's really a very significant health problem that if people got educated on how it affects their health, I think that people themselves would all revert to a vegan diet. Mm-hmm. The environmental stuff as well, it's kind of the environmental stuff, but it's kind of a survival issue that we have to do as a society. Just in order to,
To survive. Yeah. We need to take a quick break. We're talking to Sofia Pineda Ochoa, MD. Is there a website where people can find you? And then we'll continue our discussion after the break.
Yeah, that is awesome. So the website is meetyourfuture.com, and meet is spelled
M-E-A-T. Meetyourfuture.com. We'll continue our discussion with Sofia after the break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio, we are celebrating the birthday of Cesar Chavez. He was born March 31st, 1927, so this coming Tuesday would be his birthday. I have a flyer available. You can email me, Bob at GoVeganRadio.com. It's in Espanol, thanks to Sofia Pineda Ochoa, who translated for me. I thought we might take a moment here and listen to Cesar Chavez in his own words regarding animal issues and veganism.
Oh, okay.
We need in a special way to work twice as hard to make all people understand that animals are fellow creatures, that we must protect them and love them as we love ourselves. And that the basis for peace is respecting all creatures. That's the basis for peace. And that we cannot hope to have peace until we respect everyone, respect ourselves, and respect animals and all living things. And that's the basis, we think, the beginning of peace. We cannot defend and be kind to animals until we stop exploiting them. Exploiting them in the name of science, exploiting animals in the name of sport, exploiting animals in the name of fashion, and yes, exploiting animals in the name of food.
And most people don't know that Cesar Chavez was vegan. I go to celebrations of his life, and people don't know that if he were there, there'd be nothing for him to eat. So, Sofia, thank you for translating. And do you find people are surprised when they find out Cesar Chavez was vegan?
Yeah, I think even when you mentioned it, that at the World Vegan Summit, everybody was looking around like, what's he talking about? Vegan, Cesar Chavez is vegan, what? But, you know, I saw the look of surprise in their faces. So, yeah, I think they do. And I was listening to what you just played of what Cesar Chavez said, and I can't agree with him more when he said that we're not going to have peace and we're not going to have, like, a real prosperous culture until we start respecting animals. And it starts by where we left off about talking about the environmental issues, and we said that it's a matter pretty much of survival as a species. You know, when we started walking upon this earth about 150,000 years ago, to this day, it took us about 150,000 years for humanity to reach 1 billion people, a population of 1 billion people in this planet Earth. And we reached this date, we reached that population in the early 1800s. Early 1800s, we were 1 billion humans on Earth. And now, 2015, almost 200 years later, a little more than 200 years later, we are over 7 billion humans on this earth. So basically, we're increasing our population exponentially, and feeding humans with animal products is a very, very inefficient way of doing so. Because all of the calories that we spend growing the animals, fattening them, once we process the animal, when they kill the animals to eat them, they just obtain a small fraction of all of the calories invested. Mm-hmm. So right now in the world, there's already millions of people who are dying of hunger, dying with water problems. Can you imagine, Bob, like the projection of the population is that we're going to be at around 2050. We're going to be close to 10 billion people. Mm. And over 12 billion people by the end of the century.
And they cannot be meat, dairy, fish, and egg eaters. Or, you know, where's our second and third planet to supply resources needed? You know, it's crazy with the drought in California, drought in Texas. Sophia, we're out of time. I'd like to have you back on the program sometime in the future. It was great seeing you at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Once again, it's Meet Your Future, M-E-A-T, yourfuture.com, right?
Exactly. Yes, thank you so much for having me, Bob.
Okay, thank you. Sophia Pineda Ochoa, MD. And you can write me for the Cesar Chavez flyer in Spanish. Thanks to Sophia. Thanks, Sophia. Once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at goveganradio.com. We're nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. And we appreciate the support of Selectee for this program and for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. That's Select with two E's, S-E-E-L-E-C-T. Maybe that's three E's, and then the T has another E, so maybe that's four E's. Well, you get the idea. Select tea, how many varieties of tea can there be? You know, I mean, we'll check it out at selecttea.com. Organic, medicinal, flavored, instant, blends, formulas, rooibos, black and green organic, black and green organic tea, hibiscus, herbal. Herb tea, loose, everything you want about tea, and then coffee also, and so many other wonderful products from Select Tea. Thousands of products, everyone vegan, kosher. That's SEELECTTEA.com, SelectTea.com. Thanks for support for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And Professor Gary Francione was there. It was great seeing you last week at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And how was it for you?
It was wonderful, Bob. It really, I know that we both had high expectations, and I can't speak for you, but for myself, I will say that it exceeded what I thought it was going to be, and I thought it was going to be great, so it was better than great. And I know that that Anna Charlton is here with me, and she's very jealous because she, as you know, couldn't come the day before we were to leave. Our dog sitter got pneumonia and couldn't sit for the dogs, and although you valiantly tried to help me find a replacement, we just couldn't do it in the time that we had. So,
lots of people are jealous, I'm hearing, that so many people now are sorry they missed it. But, you know, it was an amazing experience. I, of course, had low expectations because I was organizing it. So it really exceeded my expectations because it went past what would have been high expectations for me. You know, it exceeded all of my low expectations.
Well, it was terrific, Bob, and I have to tell you, every aspect of it was great. I mean, I think that the place where we had it, you know, the hotel was really good. It was a very comfortable place. The food was nothing short of magnificent. The food was terrific. I'm still that Ethiopia. Well, all of it was great. I mean, the Mexican food, the Ethiopian food, I thought was just superb. And actually, I've eaten a lot of Ethiopian food, and I think I'm somewhat of an aficionado of Ethiopian food, and that was terrific. I mean, it was really, really good. I just think the whole thing, from beginning to end, all of the events were great. I didn't hear some of the speakers because I was running around and doing some other things, but the ones I heard were really good. I met a lot of really fine people. I saw a lot of people I haven't seen in ages. Dr. Michael Clapper, I've known Michael for 30 years, and I saw him, you know, last week. I hadn't seen Michael probably in 15, I don't know, about 10, probably about 10 years.
And he was ecstatic about the event. Dr. Clapper was just so thrilled with it. I mean, he felt like this is a direction that, you know, we need to go. He was like floating. He was so happy with the event. Really?
Yes, he was. And he and I spoke about it briefly, and he was enthusiastic. It's sort of a hyperbolic understatement. I do think it was the image that I probably will carry all of the time that I'm on, the remaining time I'm on the earth, is you and Daisy, walking around for the entire weekend holding Daisy. and she was, I was just amazed, and I felt jealous because I thought, I have six dogs, Anna and I live with six rescued dogs, and I could not have held, well, some of them are too big to hold, but even if I could hold them, none of my dogs would behave as well. And I really want to ask you, was that dog drugged?
she is just the perfect, you know, she's just the perfect being. I don't know. She's just so amazing. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. She liked the Mexican food a lot, though. She said the Ethiopian was good, but she was really into the Mexican food. So.
The Mexican was fantastic, but the Ethiopian was the guy for it. Right. But you know, one of the things I thought was interesting, Bob, was I rather thought that the people there would, for the most part, be people who were already turned onto and tuned into the abolitionist idea, the idea of veganism as a moral baseline, and a rejection of the welfare notions. And I mean, I would have thought that anyone who listens, anyone who listens to your show would have to come to the conclusion that you aren't a fan of animal welfare. And I was amazed that a number of the people there they certainly came with an open mind, which is great, but they were blown away because they said, you know, I've never really thought about this. You know, I've always been supporting, you know, these large groups, and now you're telling me I should be doing something different. Now you're telling me about, you know, abolitionist, vegan advocacy, grassroots efforts, not supporting these welfare reforms. And, I mean, I had a lot of people come up to me saying, gee, I always thought, you know, we needed to do welfare reform in order to make progress. And you know, I'm stunned to hear you say that that's not the case. And so I think it was interesting from the perspective that we got a lot of people there who really weren't clued into the whole framework that you and I were trying to promote. And they got they were educated. So
yeah, well, that was my hope, that a lot of people would come there and have, you know, a different way of looking at things, and maybe have some stimulating, thought-provoking talks that would, you know, lead them to just look at things a little differently. I talked a little bit about Meatless Mondays and how they've led to record egg sales, and talked about actually the compromise of whatever animal welfare movement with the egg industry, and there were people coming up to me afterwards saying, you know, I've worked for Meatless Mondays like all these years, and I never thought of it that way, and I'm just not going to do it again, you know? I mean, so, yeah, I mean, I think that was it. And I think that vegan is so hot now, you know, that people are curious, and you know, I'm glad that we can expose people to different ways of thinking about things, and that maybe we shouldn't be a movement led by a pig farmer and an organization that gives away dollar off coupons to bacon and, you know, all of those things. And the Ringling Brothers thing too, you know, that, you know, I mean, I feel bad because, you know, the wonderful little girl there, Genesis Palacio, great niece of Cesar Chavez, and she is gung-ho vegan, but also was talking about work for, you know, this situation with the Ringling Brothers elephants and Meatless Mondays, and I feel like she's, you know, the victim of propaganda, you know, that she's got it right on the vegan part, but if someone would say to her, well, you know, by your actions, the elephants are going to go into a research facility or breeding, you know, I mean, you know, so I'm just tired of the propaganda that's so false, you know, so I was hoping that we would break through with some truth at this event, you know, and there were some great speakers too, and you were, you know, I mean, you were phenomenal, and then I hate to single out people because they were just so great, you know, but it was really nice to have Sherry Kolb and Michael Dorff and Gary Steiner, and I better go through the whole list now. No, I can't, you know, I mean, everybody, and Ted Aroba, Milton Mill, I, you know, it's just on and on. It was it was incredible, and people said to me, well, you know, one person said, my the best thing I ever did in my life was go vegan. The second best thing was go to the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And then somebody else said, I go to all these conferences all the time, and, you know, they're usually mainly concerned with health, and, you know, but this really covered a wide range of, you know, what being vegan and what going vegan, you know, is all about. So
that's the feedback that we're getting, that it was really a jolt for some of the people who attended, which I'm sure is what you intended it to be, Bob. That to sidestep the corporate charity movement that this has become, and to get back to a progressive, focused, energetic, serious push towards animal rights. You were mentioning the Ringling Brothers elephants, and heaven knows we'd be happy that if no elephant or any other animal was in a circus ever again. But it really struck me, because I remember in 1982-83 working on one of the early Peter newsletters when they were amateurish with a tiny distribution, just a bunch of people in Ingrid Newkirk's apartment putting it together. And I remember drawing the outline around the picture that we had of a circus elephant, because the quality was so bad in order for it to be reproduced. And that's 1983. Mm. 2015, we get some hodgepodge agreement from Ringling Brothers. That doesn't seem to me to be much progress.
Mm. And how many after HSUS has given Ringling Brothers $25 million.
The bottom line is, as I said at the conference, I'll say again, I know it upsets people, and I don't really care, because it's the truth. These single-issue campaigns and these welfare reform campaigns are nothing but money makers for these large organizations. That's all they do, is just send out these, you know, these solicitations for funds, and nothing ever happens. Nothing ever changes. And so, like, now we've got a situation where, you know, the elephants are going to, in 3 years or however long it's going to take, they're going to be moved to a research center in Florida. And this is what animal people are all excited about. I mean, if this is a victory, I do not know what a defeat would look like. As you can probably hear in the background, our dogs are busy. We several of our dogs are busy wrestling with each other. I've tried to explain to them that they ought to be more like Daisy. And they basically, she's a California dog.
Yeah, she's mellow. We have to take a break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We will continue. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and a couple of extraneous Bob Linden pages there to keep you occupied and confused. And so we are talking to Professor Gary Francione, who was fortunate enough to attend the greatest event in the history of history, and Anna Charlton, who only gets to hear about it secondhand and be jealous. So,
let me just say, a lot of people want this to happen again, and I look at the summit as the beginning of something. What the format something takes is not entirely clear yet. As I was discussing on the phone with you yesterday, I would like to do something perhaps on the East Coast at Rutgers, where we basically have we put people into groups and we teach them how to question, you know, how to do questioning and answering from both sides of the issue. Sort of training sessions. And really intense training sessions where people will learn how to discuss these things and how to deal with the often crazy and sometimes sarcastic comments or hostile comments that you get and things like that. And I know, and we also, you and I were talking yesterday about possibly doing another summit out in California, maybe in Northern California and stuff. But look, I see this as the beginning of something. What we did last weekend was we started something.
It really did feel like that. You know, people were leaving saying they were motivated and inspired and wanted to put their talents toward, you know, promoting veganism. And people came from all over the world, you know. I mean, that was what was amazing. People are listening to us right now in Latvia. You know that? So
Yes, indeed. There were some people from my Facebook page who came, some from Holland, some from Latvia, some from Spain. I mean, we had people from all over the place.
All over, Vietnam, South America.
People that I see on my page every single day, and now I finally met. It was just wonderful. It was wonderful. But, you know, look, the work, we've got to do the work. The work is necessary to do. And to that end, I wanted to raise several things with you. I wanted to sort of go through the week. In terms of what's been happening in the, quote, a movement, mm-hmm. to sort of make it clear how important what we are doing at the summit is and why we've got to continue it.
Okay. We might have a couple of minutes before the next break.
I just want to say. Ambassador of the United Kingdom's Vegan Society, started by Donald Watson in 1944, who is currently rolling in spinning at high speed in his grave over the fact that the Vegan Society has abandoned the idea of veganism as a moral baseline and indeed is doing all sorts of anti-vegan things, one of which is having as one of its ambassadors, Fiona Oakes, who is an athlete and got it, she's a runner, and she got on BBC and made the comment, I'm reading it, let me see here, I run in a positive, proactive kind of way to promote a vegan diet. I'm not saying it's for everyone. I'm saying that it's probably not for very many people. And we had a real storm because I criticized that and said that I thought it was horrible that the Vegan Society's ambassador was basically saying veganism was too difficult for most people, probably, you know, wasn't really suited for very many people. And I got a lot of criticism for that. And I made the prediction that the Vegan Society, it was just a matter of time before the Vegan Society would be promoting happy exploitation. And labeling animal products with the stamp of approval of the Vegan Society. Well, we've come pretty close. Now Fiona Oakes, who has a sanctuary, the Tower Hill Stable Sanctuary, Tower Hill Stable Sanctuary, is now selling eggs from the sanctuary. These are supposedly cruelty-free eggs. And I was shocked when I saw this. I mean, I really was shocked. She plays a role, a major role in the Vegan Society. The Vegan Society is very supportive of her, and yet she's now selling eggs from her sanctuary, supposedly, to help raise money for her sanctuary. Now,
Gary, we need to take a break. We need to take a break, so you're not hearing me. But we'll continue this discussion with Professor Gary Francione. Taking a break now on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Happy eggs? Really? It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, Bob Linden and Bob Linden on Facebook also. And we're talking to Professor Gary Francione. You didn't hear me when I was telling you we were going to a break, but so what you were saying was that Fiona Oakes has now decided to sell eggs to benefit her sanctuary. So the Fiona Oakes of the Vegan Society in the UK selling eggs. Lacto-ovo vegans now? Is that where we're headed?
Exactly. It's sort of like it's ironic because it's like Donald Watson's got to come back again and say, well, wait a minute now. We need to coin a word to deal with vegans who eat eggs. We need
OVO, right?
It's so ridiculous. But, you know, what's really sad is I posted a completely civilized, respectful... I posted something on Fiona's page yesterday, and I said, I'm shocked at this. I would like you to explain how it's all right for you. Why are you reinforcing the idea that eggs are things to eat? You know, eggs are food. Why are you, you know, no wonder the happy egg movement is gaining such traction, because leaders or people who are perceived to be leaders are you know, are selling eggs. They're selling eggs. I'm saying these are okay eggs. And not only did I not get a response, but her managing partner, a guy named Martin Morgan, and he and some of his little pals started just viciously attacking me and other people who were supporting me. And saying, well, you know, we're a cult, you know, it's a cult. Well, I've got news for you. When your response to a reasoned argument is to say that we don't want reasoned argument because that's cultish, when you're saying that reasoning and valid arguments are a manifestation of cult thinking, you're really confused, and you are the one stuck in the cult way of thinking. I mean, it really is. It's appalling, and I don't understand why. I'm just amazed that she's doing that. I really am amazed.
Yeah, I don't know either, but you know, they've gotten good lessons from the groups here in this country. We know that HSUS is actually in the egg selling business. The American Egg Board says it finds clients who want cage-free eggs, and the egg board supplies them. So, you know, that's the trend. It's the, you know, it's the egg industry animal advocacy movement for some weird
reason. Indeed, and it's sad because you know, HSUS has never. I mean, HSUS is a classical animal welfare group. They're not an animal rights group. I mean, but the biggest problem is that, you know, the concept that the whole term of animal rights, as I explained at the summit, has become meaningless. But you know, HSUS, in fairness to them, has never really been an animal rights organization or a vegan organization. They're a classical animal welfare organization. They happen to be run by a group of people who claim to be vegans now and who are telling everybody that they ultimately have a vegan agenda. But, I mean, first of all, I think that's absurd. And the idea that you say, well, I've got a vegan agenda, but my vice president is a pig farmer, is it would be comical if it weren't so sad. But the vegan society, you expect more from the vegan society. For them to be tolerating this, and for Fiona Oakes to be doing this, and Martin Morgan, it's just shameful. It really is. But I want to go on, just so you don't think I'm being hostile or critical to the people in England. I wouldn't be, because Anna, as you can probably tell from her accent, is English. But
to the egg eaters, yeah, to the egg sellers, yeah.
Exactly. But I want to talk about what's going on here, and that is, this past week, I saw a Reddit discussion with some guy from Michael Wolf, who works now for Compassion Over Killing. And he was talking about how he was working in a factory farm for pigs, and he was talking about how difficult and how horrible it was for him to have to castrate those pigs so he could investigate, and he could help the animals by castrating them. And I was very, very shocked at this, and you know, because I've long suspected that these, quote, investigators, end quote, for these bloated welfare corporations like Compassion Over Killing and Mercy for Animals and PETA are basically engaging in harming animals. And they're doing it so they can make slick videos that they can use for fundraising purposes. And so I started researching the issue, and Anna and I listened to an interview or a talk by a guy named T.J. Tomasi, or I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but T.J. Tomasi, who was an investigator for PETA and for MFA, Mercy for Animals. Actually, it should be called Mercy for Animal Exploiters. And he was talking about working on a line slaughtering chickens. I couldn't believe he was the backup killer. Are you familiar with that term, Bob?
No.
A backup killer is the guy or gal who stands in back when the birds go through this knife, this rotating knife, and it doesn't kill a lot of them. And so the backup killer stands literally in the back of the line, and the birds that go through who aren't killed by the knife, the rotating blade, have the backup killer rips their heads off or cuts their throats. And Tomasi was doing this, and he had a great quote that I wrote down. I was killing the very animals I was there to help. I was there to save. And I really find this deeply disturbing. And to me, it indicates, it's proof positive, that the animal welfare groups do not regard animal life as having moral value. Because nobody would think it's okay to make a movie of child molestation, which is a serious problem. No one would think to make a movie showing real child molestation to bring home how horrible it is, or to rape someone in real life in order to bring home how horrible it is. Nobody would do that. But they'll do it where animals are concerned. They'll send people in and have them actually participate in killing animals and mutilating animals. I don't know. I find it mind-boggling.
Well, that's the only way you're going to get proprietary footage to have your own fundraising campaign. Surprise, surprise, all these people who are working undercover. The animals die. That's how you get to your plate. We're not surprised about that anymore. There's enough footage. We all know that they didn't commit suicide or die of boredom. They were killed to get them to put on our plate. How many more times do we need for someone to go through and shock us by treatment? Oh, isn't it being done so badly? Send us money and we'll fix this.
I mean, that whole way of looking at things just focuses on treatment, as Anna just pointed out, and not use. So in other words, they come out with their slick videos and say, give us money and we'll stop the worst abuses, and thereby reinforce the idea that there's a not abusive way to exploit animals, which is a real serious problem. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, people have noted that I don't speak out against the ag-gag laws. Well, I have. I don't like ag-gag laws because I don't like substantive restrictions on speech. But the reason I don't get really all excited about the ag-gag laws is because all they're doing is stopping the animal welfare groups from sending these investigators in to kill animals and get their proprietary footage so they can do fundraising. That's the objection to ag-gag is not that we won't be able to get information about what's going on. We know what's going on, Bob. We know what's going on. We don't need any more information. What they need is proprietary footage so that they can do their slick fundraising videos and go to everybody and ask for money. And I think it's just appalling. I really do. And I think PETA should be ashamed of itself. I think that Mercy for Animal Exploiters should be ashamed of itself. Compassion Over Killing should be ashamed of itself for having anything to do with these organizations. And by the way, for these people. And by the way, Tomasi works for now the Animal Legal Defense Fund. So, I mean, it's just, they're all in bed together. This is really terrible. It's just terrible.
Hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's enough footage out there to why would anybody have to get more footage? We see it. We've seen it for years. So what's...
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the reality is people can watch Earthling or any other gory movie and still not go vegan. Or they can... Well, I've shown that movie to plenty of students over the years who say things like, you know, yeah, it's really terrible, but we've just got to make it better. We've got, as I stress at the summit, we've got to get people away from that way of thinking. We've got to get people to stop thinking that the problem is, that we can make it better. We can't make it better. Even if it were a lot better, it would still be wrong.
Hmm. Yeah, it's horrible, and they always do come out making the perpetrator look better in the end by agreeing to have some animal care council or saying that it's an anomaly and, you know, just we'll fire these workers or, you know, I mean, it never really gets down to the fact that, you know, it's industrialized murder, and to remove ourselves from it, we have to go vegan.
Yes, you know, I remember seeing, I don't remember which organization it was, they're all the same to me, but one of the organizations did an expose of abuse in the slaughter, in the factory farming situation. And the guy who owned the factory farm said he was grateful to whichever organization did it because it helped him identify people who were treating the animals abusively, and they've now stopped that. And this is considered a victory. You know, I mean, so they're just slitting their throats and they're not kicking them before they slit their throats. I mean, it's just appalling that this is what the movement regards. It's not a movement. I mean, one of the things...
And I guess that anybody who does go undercover then, I mean, can't just... You know, get a job and say, hey, I'm standing by the side here with a camera. He or she has to participate in what's going on to be credible.
Well, you know, I've often wondered what these people do. And you know, I've really not seen it talked about before until this past week. And then I started looking deeper, you know, looking more into it. And I found this thing from PETA and Mercy for Animals. You know, they're, quote, investigator, end quote. No, he's just an animal abuser. He's an animal killer who gets paid to do fundraising, to make fundraising obscene, torture porn videos for PETA and for MFA to raise donations for. I mean, that's just horrible. That's absolutely horrible. I mean, it's not a social movement. It's not a social movement. It's a bunch of businesses, and they're all competing for the same dollars. And so what they're going to do is they're going to raise that money any way they can, including by killing animals.
Amazing. Time for another break. We'll have one more segment left with Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and we're talking to Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton, and earlier I talked about Meatless Mondays, meaning surge in egg sales, and I'll go into this more next week on how when people sacrifice something on Mondays, they increase, you know, their desire, you know, the next day. And so we're seeing our activities, you know, like backfiring and like in fur. You're saying now, gosh, we've been opposing fur for so long, and now there's a surge in fur? Is that what you were?
The Guardian in the United Kingdom had an article a couple of days ago saying that there's just that fur is booming. And actually, this is, you know, it's news, but it's not news because, you know, it's been fairly stable the past several years. The fur industry is going nuts. I mean, and so this is an example of what I, you know, when we talk about single issue campaigns and how worthless they are, think about how many zillions of dollars and how many hours of activist time have been put into the anti-fur campaign. I mean, Bob, I've been doing this for 33 years, and the first thing I ever saw, the first campaign I ever saw when I first got involved was the anti-fur campaign. It's been going on for, you know, and it was going on for like a long time before I got involved. So it's like,
well,
40,
I've been a participant. I've been an active participant, you know. I mean,
well,
I've, you know.
Shame on you. I still love you, though, Bob. I mean, the bottom line is the campaign's been going on for 50, 60 years now, and it's gotten nowhere. You see, the problem, Bob, is...
But it did get somewhere. In the 1980s, I'm old enough to remember that, it did get somewhere. Fur was something that people wore sort of at their own peril in terms of getting criticism or sort of a strange look. Now, maybe we can have a discussion now if that was the right approach in terms of people wearing leather. Didn't get that reaction, but at least it seemed that there was some progress on the issue that they'd chosen to fight about. That now fur is back as just a normal fabric. It's dyed and it's sheared and it's draped. So it's almost impossible to tell the difference between real fur and faux fur. So it seems even that we've lost what tiny bit of progress we've made on that one issue.
Well, I mean, look, but the reason for that is I think when the fur campaign was going hot in the 1980s, it was also being done it was part of the animal rights movement, and people were talking more about the, I mean, it was all part of that whole dialogue about how we were being unjust to animals and we needed to be vegan. Now, I was never a big fan of the anti-fur campaign. I always thought it was problematic. I always thought it was sexist, actually, but I still think it's sexist. But I thought, you know, I mean, at least there was, as Anna pointed out, some progress being made because it was being done in conjunction. It was, that campaign was part of an animal rights agenda, which included the promotion of veganism. Now, that's all gone away. And, you know, and veganism is now, you know, hey, if you're vegan, that's great. But, you know, if you're eating cage-free eggs or crate-free pork, that's great. And, you know, like, nobody can make judgments and blah, 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 blah. And I want to repeat something I said at the summit because I feel it to the depths of my soul. You cannot have a real social judgment, a social justice movement that doesn't make judgments. If you have what you claim is a social justice movement that doesn't make judgments, you don't really have a social justice movement. You have a joke. And so, you know, I think that we've gotten away from the judgments about what's morally right and wrong, which we were making in the 1980s. But, you know, it's just like the same thing with veal. You know, people actually sort of got turned off from eating veal. I don't think that was the right way to go, but at least it was part of it. It was like taking the brick out of the wall, one, you know, taking the bricks out of the wall one brick at a time. But the overall goal was more clear, and it was all part of an animal rights agenda. Now it's just these single-issue campaigns like, no, this is bad, let's stop. You know, this is bad, this is bad. You know, killing seals is bad while we all wear leather. You know, eating Canadian seafood is bad because they're killing seals, but eating, you know, Norwegian seafood is okay. And I mean, it's just crazy. And I think that the fur campaign is a perfect example of why, you know, the same thing with vivisection, the longest running single issue campaign in history.
Mm. Well, we'll have to leave it there because we're out of time. So,
no.
This is the way it goes. At the summit, we could just, you know, go out in the hallway. Okay, so we'll continue our discussions next week with Professor Francis.